MSU Art and Art History Professor Susan Bandies has run a student project this year examining notable architecture in East Lansing. The focus has been on homes and businesses built between 1940 and 1970. There's a book about the project in the works. That era saw some remarkable buildings go up in East Lansing. In several cases, preservation could become an issue. They aren't old enough to be listed on historic registries. The MSU Museum has opened an exhibit related to the project. It's called East Lansing Modern. WKAR's Scott Pohl met Susan Bandies at the museum to have a look. They noted that among the flat roofs favored at the time, two buildings stand out for their curves and zigzags, the Bell's Pizza location and the Bigby Coffee, both on Grand River Avenue.
You're referring to what's called Googie architecture, which comes out of California and the automobile culture. So businesses wanted people to see a building from the street as they were driving by. So you start seeing buildings that have a sense of humor or really make a statement, kind of exaggerate what they are. So that is happening at the same time as the much more staid kind of modernist architecture. But it's a 50s phenomenon, 50s and 60s, and because we have two good examples, I wanted to include them.
I wanted to talk with you further about the Bigby Coffee because it's facing the possibility of demolition as part of an effort to reconstitute that part of East Lansing. Does that make you a little sad that that building might go?
It does, and originally I was not including it in the show, and then I thought maybe this will be a way to call attention to that building and its history. And I hope the whole exhibit does that. I mean, people still don't pay too much attention to modernist architecture. And the State Historic Preservation Office's project to inventory this kind of architecture is so that we pay attention. You know, the buildings are not old enough to be on the historic register. So they do fall in this sort of no man's land of lack of protection. So a show like this hopefully makes people look around a little bit more and appreciate what we have.
Before it was a coffee shop, it was an Arby's restaurant. Were there other uses for the building besides those two, to your knowledge?
Not that I know of, but it looks the way it does because it was an Arby's. It's supposed to be a Conestoga wagon. And the logo for Arby's, the original one, was a 10-gallon hat. So it fits. When you know that, the building makes so much sense.
One thing that excites me about having an exhibit like this at the museum is that people who haven't heard about the project will not only hear about it, but see photographs of the building. And I imagine in a lot of cases, oh, I've been in that building. I've seen that home. I had no idea that there was some historical significance possibly attached to that building. That sort of interest could grow from having an exhibit like this here.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that people will come forward with more information. There are still buildings that I know were architect designed, but I don't know who the architect is. They look like styles that I'm beginning to distinguish. So there's much more to discover.
I wonder if some of the architecture firms still exist, perhaps still have records from this era that will lead you to some of that detective work you're talking about.
No, unfortunately, the large firms from the 50s and 60s merged with other firms, and now there's one large firm, Myote Group, that kind of took the others in. But Warren Holmes doesn't exist anymore, and Kenneth Black. So it's been a real detective story trying to find the information. And some of the buildings have their own archives. Like Eastminster has a lot of information about their Dow connection, Alden Dow connection. But some of the others don't. You know, they have changed over time, and somehow the documents are missing. I'm still discovering architects for whom there's very little in terms of documents and resources. Still sort of discovering things about particular buildings that I didn't know the total story of. So I see this as a work in progress.
So one academic class wasn't enough to get the job done. Is it something you think you might pursue with future classes then to continue the work?
Well, this semester I had two research assistants, and they did a lot of the grunt work, like reading the state Lansing State Journal for every day in 1950 and 51, because there was a writer who wrote on Sundays about architecture and about particular buildings that were being built. Plus, we've gotten a lot of interesting statistics about how many houses were built in a particular quarter of the year. So there's more of that research to do. I will continue working on this through the summer and have a deadline of January for the book.
Tell me what you think your students got out of being involved in this project and what maybe they have said they got out of it, because I don't think of detective work like this as being part of the art world necessarily for a student. How did this play out for your students?
Well, I think I can answer that in several ways. One, there isn't very much taught in terms of architecture in at least our program. So on a very basic level, I think it made students much more aware of the built environment, and they started looking at buildings in a very different way and understanding how spaces work. I think historically they got a perspective on the growth of the city. And in terms of research skills, because you can't Google and find anything. So it was really detective work and how you do original research, which is not always easy. And sometimes it's a matter of knowing the right question to ask. And so it was, I think, one of the best research experiences that a student could have had.
All right, now the exhibit includes some artifacts from that era in a different room. We're going to perhaps walk over there, I hope, and you can explain to me why they're included in the exhibit and give us some more background about some of these items. We have four display cases, and are these chairs part of the exhibit,
yes,
or did someone just bring them out here?
No, they are for people to sit in.
Okay, well, explain why they're here then.
The students in my course in the fall had a chance to sit in Mies van der Rohe designed Barcelona chairs at the Michigan State Medical Society. And when I was talking about the exhibition, a lot of them said how important that was and how wonderful it was to actually sit in them. And I realized that we actually had these two chairs that were used to be in one of the administration buildings maybe 15 years ago. They're not in the best condition, so they were never accessioned into the art museum collection, but they weren't given away. So this gave us an opportunity to bring them out and actually have people sit in them and see what's so wonderful about modern design.
So with four display cases here, we have some artifacts from this era, 1940 to 1970. Can you explain your thinking behind why some of these pieces were included?
What I was trying to tell a rather local story as well as a more global story. So one of the cases is full of Russell Wright dishes. And Betty Price, who was a local businesswoman, had a store in downtown Lansing, Lieberman's. It was the place you went to learn about modernist design. She sold a ton of Russell Wright. So actually, the pieces that we have included came from a local collection. So I was trying to give a sense of what people in this area would have put in their homes and also how they learned about modernist design. So another case has books, and there's sort of how-to books. There's also catalogs from two World's Fairs, because millions of people went to the World's Fair in Chicago in 1933 and the New York one in 1964 and learned about the future and model homes and new appliances. There's also early catalogs from Herman Miller, the Zeeland, Michigan company that produced a lot of the very contemporary furniture. And another case has artists who were very popular and well-known in mid-Michigan, Louis Rainer and Alma Getch and Catherine Winkler. So we have a few examples of their works, and that also allowed me the opportunity to talk about the Getch-Winkler House by Frank Lloyd Wright, which is an Okemos, so technically not part of an East Lansing show, but so many people knew Getch and Winkler and also visited the house, and it did have an influence on the way people in East Lansing thought about contemporary architecture. The fourth case has examples of new technology. And there I am hoping that people of a certain age will go, oh yeah, I remember that, the princess phone and the paper dress. And students will go, what is that? You know? the same thing with the fallout shelter sign that we borrowed, which, you know, when I was growing up, those were all over, but you don't see them now. So again, younger people will have no idea what it meant and how ubiquitous a sign like that was. So I was trying to give a flavor of what a house might be filled with through these cases and how we learned about modernism in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
I had wondered if some of the people who still live in some of these homes might have loaned you things that survived from that era.
Some of the pieces were actually donated by people who lived in modernist homes, and other pieces I've just been asking around, and lots of people had leftover bits of Miramico that I was able to borrow, and others are specific collectors of 50s objects.
What can you tell me about how long this will be on display at the MSU Museum?
This is on display through August 19th, so through the summer. We have a driving and biking tour that I will have some copies in print, but it's also downloadable from the MichiganModern.org website that I collaborated with the State Historic Preservation Office to produce. So that leads you through 16 buildings in East Lansing, both buildings that are open to the public and then just sort of passing through because they're residences. We hope people will take the time to actually look at the modernist architecture in town.
Well, Susan Bandies, after talking with you about this project in its infancy, it's interesting to see how it has played out and to know that there's more work to be done and more to learn about and enjoy in the future.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl at the MSU Museum.